In Psalm 10, if you would. And in Psalm 10, you have a window to look at humanity as God does. And thus in Psalm 10, picking up, if I can, verse 1. Why standest thou far off, O Lord? Why hidest thyself in times of trouble? The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Which is like persecution. The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined. Why? For the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire and blesseth the covetous whom the Lord abhorreth. The wicked through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. His ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above, out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. He hath said in his heart, I will not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. So the human mind and heart operates apart from God, without God, knowing God, pushing God out of the picture, pushing his judgments higher than the heavens. And that's why you read in Malachi 2 and 17, where is the God of judgment? That's their cry, the people of Israel looking at life without God. Where is the God? God isn't judge anything. God's judgments are out of sight. They aren't relevant at all. Thus, the pride, people, no place for God, no room for God. Over in verse 11, he hath said in his heart, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face, he will never see it. Arise, O Lord, O God, lift up thine hand, forget not the humble. Wherefore doth the wicked, verse 13, wherefore doth the wicked condemn God to scorn God, to renounce God is the word. He has said in his heart, thou wilt not require it. God, we don't need to trust you. We don't need to honor you. We don't need to do anything. Over one other place, you're right here, Psalm 14. And in verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. The Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek him. They are all gone aside. They are all together become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge? Who eat up my people as they eat bread and call not upon the Lord. Now, that's people. The world's looking at, where's God in the light of the world? God's left out of the picture. Now, with that, keeping that in mind, go over with me to Ecclesiastes in chapter 9, where we have been. So you're looking, and I'm trying to keep it so you, what is God trying to say? He's trying to say, listen, if you're going to leave God out of the picture, you want, whatever reasons, whatever you want to do with God, if you want to move him out, eliminate him, say there is no God, whatever you want, then all you're left with is life under the sun on planet Earth, nothing above where we are. This is it. And thus you would then tie in your thought 1 Corinthians 15 and 19, we are of all men, if there is no future, if there is no life, if Christ is not risen, and we only have hope right now, 1 Corinthians 15, 19, then we are of all men most miserable. We have nothing. That's Ecclesiastes. It's to help us, to help the world, pay attention. You live in this world where people do what they do, the way they do it. Therefore, how do we handle it? We need to understand where they're coming from, and so we don't get hung up in the wrong way about any of it. So now, in the light of that, Ecclesiastes 9, and picking up, if we can, in, remember now, verses 7 through 10, our section, and in 7 through 10, looking, and the light, you want to look at 7 through 10, remembering verse 4, 9-4. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. Remember, if only in this life only you have it. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. And thus to be on planet Earth, once you end on planet Earth, there is no more. There's nothing else. Verse 5. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. And once you leave this body, then everything that you can conceive, think, feel, want is gone in the light of Earth. You can't go to work anymore, you can't eat anymore, you don't drink anymore, you don't do anything anymore. Not on Earth you don't. So it ends. So a dead lion is not as good as a living dog. Remember, a dog is a very contemptible animal to the scavenger, to the Israel people. And thus in verse 6, also, their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished. Everything they can feel emotionally, passionately, any way you like, it's all over. Also, their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished. Neither have they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. So once your journey in Earth is ended, there is no more. And if you don't think there's any more and you don't want to consider there is more, then this is it. And thus, a living dog better than a dead lion. Now, with that, we had in verse 7, go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, drink thy wine. We shared that just a little bit. Wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, etc. With a merry heart, for God now accepteth, he approves thy works, what you're doing. God made you a human being. You eat, you drink, and you live, you work with sweat of your brow. God made it that way. God could have not done that, but he did that in his mercy, you know, by the sweat of your brow, Genesis 3. You're going to do what you do. You're of dust. You are dust. You're going back to dust. And God said, this is what you can do as a human being. This is all you can do on planet Earth. Now, having said that, picking, and he gives this advice. Now, verse 7, go thy way. They're all commands, by the way. Up to this point, he's repeated. Every now and then he says the same thing over. Eat, drink, do it. This is it. This time, though, it's a command. All each time was advice, and now he gives a command. Do this. You better go eat. You better go drink. You better go do it. And he's going to hit his point. He's making a point, and it's ironic. He's going to say something on that he means just the opposite. And as you read it, you'll see it. It's a very strong, ironic statement. He's going to say, do this. Actually, this is what's going to happen. That's what you're looking at. Do this command, but boy, no, this is really what's going to be. Now, that's the movement. Thus, chapter 9, picking up, if I can, as we read, God accepteth thy works. God says, go do it. Now, having said that, And by the way, in the Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 14, you may want to just pick up a thought for us. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 14, as we proceed. I have seen all the works, there's your word, to do, to labor, to fabricate, to manufacture. You manufacture fabric, you build buildings, you design the artisan, the skilled worker. Work, you go to work. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit, vexation chasing the wind. Think of chasing the wind if you want to do something and how unprofitable it is. You chase the wind and you never catch it, you know. You never catch it. There's that thing, the only thing I remember about it, used to be years ago, it was on the radio or somewhere, chasing ghost riders in the sky. Remember that? Oh, you probably don't. You don't want to remember that. Chasing ghost riders in the sky. Never catch them. The devil's herd. Chasing the devil's herd in the sky, which you never catch. You never catch them. Now, back over if you would, Ecclesiastes 9. If you don't understand the movement of thought, picking up from the context, if you don't understand what God is trying to use Solomon for, and Solomon says, I hope you get this message. I hope you understand it. If you don't understand, you will. If you do understand, take advantage of it. If you don't understand, you will. And if you do understand, take advantage of it and use it wisely, the information. Thus, if I can... God, remember the end of verse 7, for God now accepteth thy works. Now, already, in this present state of things, God approves you to do all of these things. This is what God has designed you to do. And in verse 8, let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Let your garments be always white in the light of the time that you live. Now remember, in the light of all of this, back over to chapter 3 for a moment, because you're looking and you understand life is full of the sequences, the pluses and minuses, the balance where you have and the balance where you don't have. And picking up in Ecclesiastes 3 and in verse 1, to everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under the heavens, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, time to pluck up that which is planted. So everything has a time, everything has time. Lift up thy garments, be wise, knowing the times. So when you say lift up your garments, as you'll see, always do it. But on every occasion that you can do this, do it. Knowing, Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time, verse 2, there's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up, time to kill, a time to heal, time to break down, a time to build up, etc., a time to weep, a time to laugh. Do what you can, knowing the cycle doesn't go away. Never goes away, just stays there. Knowing that now, with that little, and by the way, while you're there, over in chapter 3 and verse 11, you have the word again. verse 11, God hath made everything beautiful. To cause it to shine, to make it useful, to make it profitable. God hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he set the world, eternity. He puts eternity in the heart so that you know you want a leaf, you want a dog, Dogs don't worry about dying. Pigeons don't worry about dying. Cabbages don't worry about being eaten. They don't have any of that. They don't have that in them. Humans do. Humans do. You know, that's dying. The dog may be not feel good, whatever, the cat, the dog, the mouse, whatever it is. But they have no sense. They have nothing's in there about death, dying. And so, but humans do. Thus, God put eternity, Ecclesiastes 3:11, God put eternity, timelessness, in the middle of our times, a time to eat, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up, a time to live. Here we are. We live. Here's the clock ticking away. And God put in the middle of us timelessness. Timelessness. For what reason? The end of verse 11. No man can find out the work God. What are you doing? God has something he's doing. That God maketh from the beginning to the end. No one knows. How do they figure? If you don't include God, Psalm 10, as we started with, if you don't include God, how on earth are you going to come up with an answer? You got it in here, you need an answer. Got to have an answer. Out here, it's going up and down, and you don't control one drop of it. It's going all over the place. And thus, God put eternity in the heart to let us know you can't do this without God. Purpose of Ecclesiastes. Over, if you would, chapter 9. Chapter 9 again. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Now, the garments are always, and it means all the time, always be white, always. No, always white. Habit, a custom, let them be white. Knowing, you're going to be, as you'll see in a minute, let thy garments be white. And the word white, we're looking at, it has to do, in this case, we're going to see it in the morning differently. But here it has to do with cheerfulness, joy, a festive occasion. It's the opposite of mourning. You put on white to happiness, festivity, joy. And it has to do with the whole. Try to take the whole of your time and wear white as often as you can, as much as you can. Thus, in verse 8, and remember now, as you're reading, all of these, always, in 8a, let thy garments, and all of it has to do with, and every time it gives you something, it'll then give you the motive for doing it. It'll say something and then give you the reason to do. Thus in verse 8, let thy garments always be white and let thy head lack no oil. You're going to do this and your garments are white, your head lacking no oil at all. And looking at it, and remember oil, white has to do with cheerfulness, etc. And in all of that, I would like you just in picking up in thought in the end of verse 8, lacking no oil, no lack, no want, nothing missing, no you want without it. You have what you need. You're looking to have your head anointed with oil. Now remember now, in the countries over there, oil was a very big item. Oil, perfume. You don't have showers, you don't have a whole lot of running water. And that's how you protected your face, your skin, your everything. Oil, olive oil, big thing. And so in the light of that, they were not, don't let your head suffer want, lack oil. Do not save it for another time. Use it wisely. Use it when you can. You're going to have an occasion to laugh. Take it. When you have an occasion to have something, use it. The clock's ticking. A time to have, a time not to. A time that is and a time isn't. Use it when it comes. That's the word. This is all you've got. This is it. Better a living dog than a dead lion. Here we are. Now, you might as well use every occasion you got when it comes. That's the admonition. Wise admonition. If this is it, then you better take advantage, knowing that everything is going to keep cycling. And therefore, when the occasion arises, you're going to take it as best you can. Now, having said that, go over with me, please, over to 2 Samuel chapter 14. 2 Samuel chapter 14. And picking up, please, in thought, and picking up in verse 2, just to get the place of oil covering, white. Chapter, 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 2. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, feign, make believe, thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel, and put on mourning apparel, and anoint not, N-O-T, not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that hath had that had a long time mourned for the dead. Don't put any oil, no white, no oil. Mourning. It isn't a good time. Every time you get a good time, if this is all you've got, then you got to take it. Over, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28. And in Deuteronomy chapter 28, if I may, picking up in thought, verse 15, just to get the change in it. Deuteronomy 28, verse 15. And it shall come to pass, remember that goes from blessing to cursing. Blessing just has a handful of statements. Cursing has a great big pile like this, verse after verse after verse of cursing. So it'd be just like God says about heaven, one word. And then he says about hell, 13 times. He said, you don't need to know about heaven. You need to know how to get, you need to know where you're headed. And he emphasizes it. Thus, in chapter 28, verse 15. But it shall come to pass that if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. They're going to get you. You aren't going to escape them. No how. One of which is, part of which is, chapter 28 in verse 40. I'll read verse 39 to get a little context. You'll pick it up very quickly. 28 verse 39, thou shalt plant vineyards and dress them, but thou shalt neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worms shall eat them. Everything you try to do won't come out. Verse 40, thou shalt have olive trees throughout all thy coast, but thou shalt not, N-O-T, anoint thyself with the oil. For thine olive shall cast his fruit. And so, keeping in mind the olive tree, think of olives like a prune, smaller than a prune, and it becomes green, and then in September it turns black, and that's when you eat the olives, black. God said before it ever gets there, you'll never get the olives. You'll never get the oil. You won't get the plants. You won't get anything. Verse 41. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them, for they shall go into captivity. Remember the Assyrian captivity, Babylonian captivity, the Philistines. Down the line, you line them up. It isn't going to come out for you. And thus, anoint thy head with oil while you can. Wear white while you can, knowing the sequence, knowing the movement, if you would. Having said that, go over with me to Isaiah 61. Isaiah chapter 61. And you're looking at the white garment. You're looking at the oil to put on to fresh, to give the freshness of life, living. Isaiah 61, picking up in, if I may, in verse 3. His second coming, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning. So anoint thy face with oil. It's the opposite of mourning. It's the opposite of being down. If you can be up, and this is it for you, this is all you've got in this life, then you've got to go and make the best of it, because this is it. And God has given you these things, and a time and a season for everything. And so, in the middle of verse 3 there, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of mourning, and the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, etc. For the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, and the planting of the Lord, that he might be glorified. So you're looking at going, what are you telling? Well, if you're going to make, this is it, if a dead dog is better than a... It's probably because they haven't had much sleep, so that has to be the reason this time. What can I tell you? Whatever that dog was doing, we've killed that dog so many times. That poor dog, we better change it. I think I'm going to change it in there because, I mean, it must be wrong. What can I tell you? Now, thus, a living dog, you might as well do it. If that's all you've got, then that's what you're going to do. And mourning, opposite joy. Would you go with me, please, over to Zechariah chapter 12? Zechariah chapter 12. And if I can, Zechariah chapter 12, picking up, if I can, in verse 10. And again, I'm tying it together. Mourning, when he comes, they go from mourning to joy, from unhappiness to happiness. God makes the difference. Leave God out, down. Put him in, it changes everything. Thus, when he comes, every eye shall see him. And in chapter 12 of Zechariah, verse 10, and I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplication, the spirit of God's ministry. And they shall look upon me, whom they have pierced. Here's the Lord telling you, they're going to crucify me in my humanity. And they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. And then you keep reading, in that day there shall be great mourning in Jerusalem, etc. Because they're going to realize, they're in the tribulation. The tribulation is given, remember Israel, how are you going to reach the nation of Israel? Way back here in Deuteronomy, by tribulation. Tribulation awakens people to think right, do right, and come out right. Otherwise, the tribulation, one of the huge items is to Israel's going to get saved in a moment. And thus they're going to be mourning. Not mourning about they're mourning in the light of what they've done. They've crucify him. And they're going to realize they crucified him. They crucified the Christ, the Messiah, the Anointed One. And you know that in Isaiah 53, etc., they're going to understand that what they've done to Christ is something awful. Thus, picking up Psalm 45, we're looking at anointing and clothing, so we get a sense of it from both windows, from human and from God's. Psalm 45. And picking up in thought, remember Psalm 145, a key psalm on the Messiah, etc. Then in Psalm 45, picking up please in verse 7, thou lovest righteousness and hatest wickedness. Therefore God, thy God, hath anointed thee, and there's your word, oil, joy, the oil of gladness above thy fellows, to exalt the Lord Jesus Christ, to give him the oil of gladness, to anoint the righteous one in a most wonderful way. And God's wonderful, wonderful kings, remember now, kings are anointed for all the kings are, when they were in the right place here, with, and even unsaved kings, were anointed, consecrated by oil to take the throne. But that isn't what it's here. It's he is honored. He is honored and respected among the people when he comes. Every eye shall see him. And they're going to be saved, and they're going to honor him. And remember, in the beginning of the beginning of the millennium, everyone is saved. There's no one unsaved. There could be a little woman pregnant, but that baby isn't out yet to do anything, little baby. But everyone that is adult is all saved. They're all, everyone, they can't get into the millennium unless you're saved. After that, of course, it becomes something else with all the humans that are born. So here we're looking at the oil of gladness in verse 7. If I can, in Psalm 141. And picking up, if I may, in verse 1. David, Lord, I cry unto thee, make haste unto me, give ear unto my voice when I cry unto you. Verse 3, the prayer. Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips carefully. God, I'm looking to you. And I'm looking to you to deal with my head and my heart. Thus, skipping down if I can, God's dealing with the people. Verse 5. Let the righteous smite me, it shall be a kindness. Let him reprove me, it shall be an excellent oil. I'm the beneficiary, which shall not break my heart, my head, nor yet my prayer also shall be in their calamities. I'm looking to God. I'm trusting God to do whatever. And I'm not backing off. God, you do what you do, and what you do is right, and I am the beneficiary of it. So God, deal with my head, deal with my heart rightly, and it will be an excellent oil to me. It will cause me to be delighted. It will cause me to be glad when you deal with my heart and make it right. God, it's a wonderful thing to have that happen. Thus, if you would, in Psalm 23, and you would know, in Psalm 23, and picking up, please, in verse 5, you'll have the same term. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. See, here we are. Now, for the believing heart, the times and seasons, they come and go, a time of war, a time of peace, a time to live, a time to die. All of these are going. But a believing heart has a different window, different advantage. I had a meeting last night I had to have, and in the process, here's the world in which we live. And here are all this churchianity, churches and everything. Here they all are, wow, out there. And that's what, that's really what it is, like Laodicea. It's really what is there. It isn't, you can't make believe about it. It's really there. And you're going to try to help them. We're trying to help the churches. And in the process of trying to help them, you have to realize, the churches have to realize, this is what we have to work with. We have to work with what is existing. And therefore, to find the Apostle Paul, to find a Timothy, to find a Titus, don't hold your breath, because you aren't going to find them, hardly. God isn't doing them today. God could do them, but the world doesn't want them. The church doesn't want them, and they don't have them either. They don't have any of this. And so when people are looking, they have to understand you're only going to get what is existent. You understand? You can't get what isn't there. You only can serve up. You only can make use of what's here to work with. That's normal. And that's how they are. That's how the world is. That's how religion is, churches, etc. That's generally speaking. God, what are we, where are we going, as believers, what do we need to do? We need to be working out from heaven, as we've shared 100 times. We're looking from heaven and working from heaven. This is all true down here. This isn't false. This is really, really what it is. And if you're going to try to work with it, you can only work with what's there. That's all that's there. And you can't. You can play games with it. You won't come up with anything. It isn't. You can't get it. You're going to have to go to heaven and look to God in order to be able to handle what's here. Understand? Ecclesiastes. You look in this way. Even and you're looking and trying to say, what can we do? What do? We do this. We do that's true. But if we look to heaven. We're going to get caught up if we don't look up and then look down. Same world, same everything. We have a different window to look at it. Verse 5, thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Psalm 23, 5. God does a most wonderful thing for us. And so in the midst of the battle, in the midst of the journey through time, God is doing a wonderful thing. Now, the believing heart has a wonderful window, looking from heaven. Same world, same problems, same diseases, same market, same gas price, the same everything. A different window. Go with me, please, to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And I just want to run by you. Remember, we're eating and drinking and working. And if we're going to do it on earth, then this is it. A living dog is better, then this is what you do. But if there's more to it than that, then you need to understand you're looking at the same world, same everything. You use it differently. What makes the difference between eating and drinking and be merry for tomorrow what? We die. What is the difference? God makes the difference. Thus, chapter 10, verse 31, you know. Whether therefore you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to what? To the glory of God. Hold another window. A time to live, a time to die, a time to go up, a time to go down, a time to plant, a time to pluck up. A whole other window to look at the whole thing. Same world, same everything, new window. And what is the window? The window is none other than God himself. God, you make the difference. And that's what you're trying to say in the book of Ecclesiastes. Yes. Thus, go with me again over to Colossians. Colossians in chapter 3. Colossians 3, and picking up in thought, if I can, in verse 16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns, spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And doing that, looking to God, working out from God's point of view, make sure God's in it, God's word. Verse 17, and whatever you do, whatsoever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by him. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it. And let your garments be white and your head anointed with oil. You're going to try to make the best of it. But you have to know the world's going up and down, off and on, hot and cold, easy, hard. It isn't accommodating us. Ah, but from God's point of view, you see the whole thing differently. And the world is exactly what it is. And God said, I've saved you, Galatians 1, from this present evil world. I saved you from it. But we're in it. I don't take you out of it, but I leave you in it. I don't want you of it, but in it. See? So you see it differently. Marriage, family, friends, home, people, you see them from God's point of view. Wow, a whole nother window. Thus, and we do it, verse 17, whatever you do, do it all in the name of our Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father. Thanks to God and the Father by him. A wonderful, wonderful honor. Verse 23, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance of the inheritance. For you serve the Lord Christ. So the whole world is different. Our windows are different. How we think is different. It all comes out different. Wonderfully, wonderfully different. Thus, back over to Ecclesiastes and chapter 9. So wearing white, you're trying to be glad, and try to put the oil on, and oil of gladness, opposite of sadness, you're going to do it. If that's all you've got, then that's all you, that's the word, that's the advice. Maybe another way to say that. This is heaven for all that know not the Lord Jesus Christ. This is the only heaven they'll ever have. This is the best shot there is. On the other hand, for believers, it's the worst hell you will ever know is right now. Helps you. So you don't have to punish the world. This is it for the world. Go eat, drink, and be merry. Go do it. This is it. All you got. It's all you got. Now, having said that, Ecclesiastes chapter 9. And picking up, if I can, in verse 9. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. So live joyfully is the theme, joyful. And it's the word live is each time it's used here is in the plural. It has to do with the condition and continuance of life, the fullness of life. Exercise the fullness of life, which you've been reading in verse 7. And verse 8, and now in verse 9, adding to it, live joyfully with thy wife whom thou lovest. Look joyfully, look to see, to have arrangement, to be in the fullness of life, the attachment, domestic love to the wife whom thou lovest. And love is a very broad word in the Hebrew, very for many things. Solomon loved 1 Kings 11:1, Solomon loved many women. See, that's what he did. He loved many women. There's your word. Love. Live joyfully with thy wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. You're going to live with a wife your entire life, all the days of this life, this living of vanity. And knowing this, that all of it, like eating and drinking and everything, is going to go, it's going to all end up facing the same consequence, same item. Everything is facing the inevitable. The inevitable, you're trying to make believe a living dog is better than a dead lion, better to be alive and be terribly in a terrible state than to think of dying where everything ends. You don't go to the pizza parlor anymore. You don't have whatever. You don't have anything anymore. So with that in mind, live joyfully with thy wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. And the light of vanity belonging to your vainness. It's not going to, you can do it. And you know, God says it. You don't have to think about it too much. That's why God said, I did not come to send peace but a sword. Because there is no relationship that can work on earth. The one that works is the one with me. Everything else is terminal. And that's why when you die, whose wife, you remember, the Lord said, they said, whose wife shall she be? And no one, because there is no marriage. There is no mother, fathers, brothers, and sisters as we know them. It doesn't exist. It's only now. This is it. And so in the process, you want to do it in the days of thy vanity, belonging to your vainness. It's all going to vanish from sight, like smoke, like mist, transitory. Maybe difficult to understand it all, but there it is, going to empty quickly, going to pass away. Live joyfully with thy wife in all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. God has given thee, God is the giver. God gives thee under the sun. God gives this. God does this for you. Now, over if you would, over in, where are we going to go? Oh, we'll go one. And over to Genesis. Genesis 3. Just got time for one. It isn't the best way to end, but you'll get something, you know. In Genesis 3, picking up, God gives. Woman. God did that. God made the man. God made the woman. God made the woman for man. Made the woman out of man. They all belong together. But it's all going to terminate because there is no husband, wife, man, woman. When you get there, God ends that. So just now, just for now, God did that. Now, keeping in mind that God gives. Now, did Adam understand that? Chapter 3, verse 12. And the man said unto the Lord, the woman whom God thou gavest, there's your verb, gavest to be with me, she gave, there's the verb again, she gave me of the tree and I did eat it. The woman did it. I didn't do it, said Adam. I didn't do it. That woman gave me it, and I ate it, you see? And he blamed. You see, God, you gave me the woman, and the woman gave me the fruit. I'm totally innocent, said Adam. I'm innocent. I didn't do it. The woman came from you, and the fruit came from her. So I can't possibly be responsible. And then God tells you what? That the man is 51%. If you would, in the marriage, responsible. And sin didn't come by the woman, but by whom? The man. The man, see? The man did it. Sin came by the man, Romans 5:12. One man brought sin. Adam said, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. Wrong, see? Anyway, that's not a way to end, but you got the idea? Thank you.